everyone. I'm Arlene Dickinson. Thanks for joining me on my podcast.
It's no secret that small business is a big deal for TELUS. Earlier this year, TELUS helped make things better for small businesses through their pledge to stand with owners. In continuing their support for owners across Canada, they are excited to introduce the Owner's Advantage Plan, an exclusive mobility plan tailored to help business owners stay connected to their family, business, and community. The Owner's Advantage Plan offers a wide variety of benefits designed to provide greater value and more flexibility than ever before, including yearly device upgrades, endless data, same-day device repair, and access to on-demand virtual healthcare, all on the world's fastest mobile network in the world. Visit telus.com/ownersadvantage.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Reinvention. Today, Arlene chats with digital creator and YouTube sensation, Matthew Santoro. Before the millions of subscribers and countless views, Matthew actually started his work life by chasing stability and good pay. That resulted in a career in accounting, where he spent a lot of time and effort getting his Master's of Accountancy, only to be laid off a few years into his job. That typically stressful time was actually the opposite for Matthew. Feeling a sense of relief and opportunity to focus full-time on his passion of content creation, Matthew went on to create the YouTube channels he's popular for today. Matthew also discusses the mental health issues that come with being on social media for so long, and how he's grappled with depression, an issue that Arlene is no stranger to.
All right, well, Matt, what a pleasure to talk to you this morning. I'm vacillating between hyper nervous to talk to like a YouTube star like you, like somebody who knows so much about what they're doing when it comes to, you know, these types of things, and real excitement about kind of learning more about your whole story, because it's fascinating. Like, you talk about reinvention. I mean, you, like, weren't you an accountant? I mean, like, let's go back to young Matt, the days of young Matt. Tell me about young Matt.
The simpler days. Well, first off, I want to say
simpler days.
Yeah, first off, I want to say thank you for having me on. I mean, this is an honor. I've seen your stuff a bunch of times on TV, and obviously you're a legend. So I appreciate you having me on. But yeah, as far as, I mean, my goodness, I don't even know where to start. I used to be an accountant. I went to Brock University in St. Catharines, got my Master of Accountancy degree, and the only reason I went into accounting was because, you know how it is as a teenager, you don't know what life is about. You don't know what you want to do, what you're even passionate about. Very few do. Some don't even know until they're even much older. So I remember asking my accounting teacher, Mr. Graffy, like, how much do accountants make? And he goes, well, if you go into accounting, you'll make a lot of money. And as a teenager, That's all I needed to hear. So went into that and was never passionate about it, but I had started the momentum. I had started the ball rolling. And so I stuck with it. And 5.5 years in university, got a Master of Accountancy. And I'd never been passionate about it, but I knew that I wanted to go into business because my dad was in business and he had always been a successful businessman. And so I thought that that was for me. And so I was doing it and, you know, I was making probably 25-30 grand a year as a junior accountant. And then the 2008, 2009, well, I graduated in 2010, but as you recall, the economic crisis that happened circa 2008 took a few years to get over, and there was ripple effects from that. And so I ended up being laid off. And when that
2008?
No, this was around, I think, 2012.
Okay.
So because I worked for a small firm, so they never really recovered fully. And they had been losing clients and things like that. And so I ended up getting laid off, myself and an older woman. And I remember when that happened, thinking that the system that everything that I had been taught kind of was turned on its head, because, you know, our parents and our parents' parents, we're told, you know, you can work at a factory for 40 years, you know, finish with a pension and whatever all that was. I don't even know what any of that is anymore, because it really doesn't exist.
It's true.
And so I remember thinking, if I'm going to face that level of risk, where with a master's degree, I'm still going to get laid off, then why not take that same level of risk and try working for myself? And so I did. And so I gave myself 1 year to make the YouTube thing happen. Now, to back up a bit, I had been doing YouTube on the side when I had been getting home from work and working on videos and doing that all night and then going to work the next day. And truthfully, sometimes working at work on my videos, if there was a little... Yeah, that's not why I was laid off. I probably.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, no.
I don't know. Let's see.
Yeah, let's
add it. The side hustle at work is never a good idea.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, the side hustle at work thing, everybody does that now to some degree. You know, everybody has to work their 9 to 5 or whatever it takes to get through the day. But if you look at a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of what they do on the side bleeds into their day-to-day stuff and it starts to take over more and more of their day. And so for me, I decided that, you know, I had been doing YouTube on the side just for fun and comedy skits and things. And I said, okay, I'm going to give myself 1 year to really go at this. And if nothing happens after a year, then I'll figure something else out. But I knew I wasn't going to go back into accounting. So during that time, I'd been laid off and I was making no money, basically. I had a lovely girlfriend that I'm still friends with today who supported me during that time. And if it wasn't for her, I don't know where I would be because I didn't have any money coming in. So at least I had a roof over my head and food in my stomach. And for a year, I was going hard at it. And then I got my break just at the end of 1 year where I was introduced to, after doing some networking, introduced to some big YouTubers who helped promote my content. That got me into the algorithm. The algorithm took off and the rest is history.
So, but I'm curious about that because when I, you know, if you think back to that time, like you said, you were already doing it in 2012. I mean, YouTube was just as it really in its infancy at that point, and you were doing it before then. So you, what made you, attracted you to that platform and made you think, hey, this is where I'm going to express myself? How did you know it wasn't going to be a failure at like MySpace or, you know, some of these other platforms? Not that, I don't know if that's a failure now, maybe it's transitioned into something else or pivoted, or if it's, does it still exist? Does MySpace still
exist? No, I don't think so.
See, that's either I just really impressed somebody that I knew what MySpace was, or somebody went, oh my God, she's so old that she's thinking MySpace.
No. MySpace, I mean, I think Friendster was the first. I never got on that, but MySpace was the thing. And then I remember, I remember the moment that Facebook became the thing in my life. I remember, I don't know if this is on topic or not, but I remember I was at a house party and I was on MySpace and all these people were like, we got to upload pictures for this. To this party to Facebook. And I remember thinking, what the hell's Facebook? And then they were like, oh, you're on MySpace? No, you got to go to Facebook. And I remember that exact moment. I remember the room I was in. It was just kind of one of those moments.
Really?
But what was your question? I apologize.
My question was like, what made you, you know, think YouTube was a place and a platform that you wanted to kind of put your investment of your time and your energy and your creativity into?
So I remember circa 2006 when YouTube first started. I remember discovering the platform and seeing that there were, it was a place where you could share video and that just didn't exist on the internet. And I thought it was so cool, the idea of recording life and putting that online to share with people. There was something that just lit a fire inside of me about that. And my first YouTube channel was called Hybrid 111 because I was a fan of Linkin Park. And they had an album called Hybrid Theory.
Yeah.
But I remember just uploading like videos of parties that I would go to and things of that nature. And I remember being at a party one time where I was recording it with my Sony point and shoot camera. And it was shooting 1080p video. And that was huge at the time. And I remember this girl saying, what are you doing? And I said, oh, I'm just recording it for YouTube. And she goes, YouTube? What's YouTube? And she looked at me like I was so weird. And now here we are, you know, over 10 years later after that. And it's like everybody does it. But I remember there was just something really interesting about that. And so I didn't think anything would come of it until 2010, right after I graduated. I remember for a couple of years at that point, I had been watching people on YouTube. I had seen that there were people like Ray William Johnson, Philip DeFranco, and all of these other trailblazers that had millions of subscribers. And I started to realize there's a burgeoning underground thing happening here. And it's big, but it's not mainstream yet. And I need to get in on this. And so I started making videos with the intention of being famous. And I wanted to be like these people that had millions of fans. And so I started doing that. And as I uploaded more videos, you know, I got a small but loyal following, I guess you could say. And it took me about 4 years to get 15,000 subscribers. And then after the fourth year, which is the story I just told you, which is I gave it, you know, that year to make it, I gained 3.5 million in a year. And that's the tipping point, right? Malcolm Gladwell tipping point. It just kind of all happens at once.
So it all happens at once, but it took 4 years of effort to get there, right? It's kind of that, the tip. Yeah. It's like an overnight success is never an overnight success.
No,
always this work that comes. And people, I think, forget that, especially when you're reinventing yourself, that there is this, you know, it's one thing to declare that you're going to go do it. It's another thing to put in the heavy lifting and the hard work to make it happen. I want to go back though to that moment. You're an accountant, you've got a master's in accountancy, you've invested all this time and money and education, you get laid off.
Yeah.
Tell me that day. Tell me what went through your mind. Because I think people who are listening to this podcast and who are thinking about reinvention of their own are usually triggered by some crisis in their life that makes them think differently. So you went from accounting to a creative endeavor. Like, tell me, I want to get into your head. Like, what happened?
Well, I had always been a goofball my whole life. I really liked making people laugh. I really liked being in front of people. I've always liked that my whole life. And when YouTube came around, I realized this was an opportunity to be the class clown, but on a global stage.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just decided to take a risk. And like I said, to me, I didn't even really look at it like a risk anymore because I had already been presented with, oh, you're laid off. So to me, there was no difference. But the day I was laid off, I remember leaving the office with a smile on my face.
Really?
Yep. I had a smile on my face. I remember thinking I'm free because I believe that the universe will always push you in a direction that you're meant to go. And it's up to you to recognize that. And a lot of people choose to look at it as something that is destroying them or oh my God, my life is over. This is awful. But, you know, nothing is either good nor bad. Only thinking makes it so. And Shakespeare said that. And it's very true because that day I could have said, oh my, all this work and now I'm laid off. How am I going to find another job in the economy? But instead I looked at it as, you know what? I can let this destroy me or I can do what I really love to do and at least give it a shot. And if worse comes to worse and I'm going to be homeless, I can go back into accounting. But I decided to take a shot. And I remember going home and I recorded a video of myself talking about my feelings at the time. And the video is not online anymore, but I used to have a vlog channel where I talked about stuff like that. And I remember just being happy and my girlfriend coming home and I just said, I got laid off. And I was just like exactly the way I am now. I remember just thinking I'm free. I'm free because I would not have taken that step unless I was laid off. And I'm incredibly grateful to this day for being laid off. And I choose to live my life like that to this day. I try to live a life of non-judgment and instead just look at life as a series of events. And I can choose whether or not I look at those events as negative or positive. And that's really all there is to it. I've had multiple things like that happen in my life. And most recently I had another thing happen. If I can tell you that story, it's kind of an interesting
Absolutely.
One.
Absolutely.
So I had been invested in Bitcoin since 2017. And I drank the Bitcoin Kool-Aid right off the bat. I read the books. I watched the documentaries. I thought, oh my God, this is the perfect currency. It is a complete reinvention of something that's never been reinvented before. And even at $10,000 a coin, we're at the beginning stages of something big because in 10 years, you're going to look back and think $10,000 a coin is a steal because it's probably going to be who knows, right? So I invested. And the last 3 years of Bitcoin have been hell for Bitcoin investors, unless you rode the ups and downs, but I didn't. And I invested quite heavily. And to make a long story short, I went through ups and downs. I lost.
I don't think I'm going to like where this is going, by the way.
Well, yeah, maybe not. Maybe, it's going to be a hard, it's going to be hard to swallow. I'm still dealing with
it. Okay.
But I had been holding my Bitcoin for years and years and years, went through all the ups and downs. And what's nice about that is I'm ironclad when it comes to investing. There's nothing that could happen in the traditional investing world that would ever rock me, because there were days where I lost over six figures. Like it's crazy. Thanks. Like I put a lot of my savings into Bitcoin. And so I'd been holding, and the opportunity came to sell at $11,500. And so I did that and I made a profit and I felt good about that. 1 month later, today, it's at 18,000 something. And it'll just continue to rise because now PayPal has adopted it. And I knew this day was coming. I knew it was just a matter of a big player adopting Bitcoin for the floodgates to open. This is truly the beginning. I mean, PayPal adopting it is just the beginning. And I even said it's going to take Amazon, Walmart, PayPal, or some other big player to adopt it, which will bring it into the mainstream in a meaningful way. And now PayPal's done it. So now the floodgates are open and everyone's investing, and it's going to wicked surpass $20,000 a coin. There's no question about it. But the reason I'm bringing this up is because, going back to my thing before, what I was saying, which is, you know, I can choose to look at things as good or bad. And I can choose to look at the fact that I if I were holding right now, I would be up 800,000 US in a month. Wow. In a month. Now, again, it took years to get there, but it hurt to know that I went through all those ups and downs and I sold right before what I've been waiting for happened, right before. And that was a bitter pill to swallow. But again, I had to, you know, I'm a mindfulness advocate. I meditate every day. Meditation changed my life. And I've become a very spiritual person over the last 3 years. And I said to myself, Matt, what would your training say about this? And what it would say is, we don't know what the future has in store. We don't know what the grand plan is. And so there are many times in everyone's life where we pray for something or we hope for something, and then we get that thing and it ends up being the worst thing that ever happened to us. And vice versa. We, you know, so in this situation, yeah, it hurts that I could have been wealthy. It hurts that I could have made money. Like anyone wants that amount of money, but I don't know what would have happened if I got that money. I could have got it and it would have maybe changed me as a person, made me a worse person, or who knows, maybe I would have bought a Tesla and then crashed that Tesla and then been disabled or something. A million things could have happened. And so instead of playing the game of, I wish that, instead I'm going to play the gratitude game of, no, at least Bitcoin didn't go to zero. That's another alternative that could have happened. And I'm grateful that I made at least some money, and I'm grateful that I have a house over my head, and that I live an above average life, and I have beautiful cats, and I have my health. I don't have COVID. And so, you know, it's literally just what you choose to focus on.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many lessons, and I'm trying to parse them out of my mind, because I think you've touched on a few things that I really believe are understated. First of all, as it relates to investing, I got advice from a broker years and years and years ago. We were talking about investing. I said, okay, tell me kind of what are the rules I need to think about? He said, there's three rules. He said, the first one is you can't go broke taking a profit. He said, the second one is, you know, if you're greedy, you get slaughtered. And the third thing is you always leave some money on the table for the next guy. In other words, you can't always sell at the top. Don't be greedy. And if you made some money, be happy for that. Just exactly what you just said. And this notion of how important our attitude plays in a reinvention, you know, how, and in life in general, you know, you said, listen, I got fired. It was the best thing that could have happened to me. I have found in my career, when I've had to let people go and had to be on the other end of firing somebody, that for the most part, there is a sense of relief from that person, because they weren't happy in the job either. They didn't like what they were doing. They needed an excuse almost to go and do something different, you know? And while at the time it feels horrible and it's never fun to give that news. And I'm certain it's never fun to receive that news. I've been fired in my career as well, that, you know, it still is that impetus to think, okay, what am I going to do? And I think there are people out there that kind of perseverate on bad luck. They blame timing. They blame everything, but you know, like it's everything's fault. You know, if I just had this happen, my life would be different. Instead of saying what you just said, which is, well, that happened. What am I going to do with it to make it into something better? And that positive attitude is a very difficult thing to have when you see your world kind of crashing in on you. How do you hold on to that optimism, Matt? Like, how do you, as you've gone through this and gone from, first of all, just to add to that, 4 years to get to 15,000 followers, the fact you stayed with it says a lot, because most people would have said, oh, this isn't working. It's not enough followers, right? Mm-hmm. How did you stay optimistic through that to get to that tipping point?
I didn't, to be honest with you. And I don't think that you need to necessarily stay have optimism. I mean, for me, I remember, again, I had old videos of me saying, I don't think this is ever going to happen. There were so many sleepless nights of me staying up thinking, when is this ever going to happen? I don't see the way this is going to happen. Right. Like, to get famous on the internet is it's essentially winning the lottery. How see the path. Like, there's no way. But as you know very well, success is simply a matter of pounding it out, and just not stopping. And you don't have to be optimistic during that time, just as long as you keep going. And it's not realistic to be an optimist all the time. Optimistic. It's what is realistic, though, is you can be in a crappy mood, but just don't stop. And obviously optimism helps with output and things like that. But, you know, it's just a matter of not giving up. And I think that's the number one thing for success.
Persistence. You do need optimism to be persistent, though. I believe that you have to have hope in order to stay persistent. You have to believe that you can get through whatever that mountain is ahead of you, or
sure,
you can climb it and get over it, right? And what do they say? Sometimes you get to the top of the mountain only to see that there's a mountain right ahead of you again, you know, and you have to keep going. And that is really difficult, I think, for many people through the pandemic. I do believe that it's really critical that we kind of have faith back in ourselves. And that's what you did. You put your faith and your hope and your belief in you. That's where you laid your bet. You like you talk about investing in Bitcoin. What you did was really say, I'm going to invest in myself. And I think when you reinvent, that is like critical. Like you have to say, I can do this. I have this in me. And if I fail, like you say, so what? I'll go get another job if I have to.
Yeah. And eliminate distractions. That's another big one. Mm-hmm. And eliminate anything that empties your psychic energy, or your mental energy, maybe is a better term, because I'm in the middle of, it's funny. It's actually really funny that I got an email from you because I'm literally in the middle of reinvention right now. Like,
oh, tell us
today.
Tell us.
No, like today. Tell. Like it's pretty wild, really? That this is yeah. What happened was, as I'm sure you've seen some of my videos, I've done a lot of top tens. I've done 950 at this point, and I just got tired of being a talking head, and you know, the format just didn't work anymore. And I should have reinvented years ago, and I didn't, because it was still bringing in money. And the money was good, and it wasn't a lot of effort. And I had a guy writing for me, but I completely lost my passion for what I was doing. And the pandemic it's going to do a lot of positive things for a lot of people. And I know a lot of people don't like hearing that. Like when I put a lot of positivity on Twitter and stuff, which I'm off now, which I'll get to in a minute. You know, people just don't, a lot of people don't want to hear it because they're in so much pain. They don't want to hear that everything's going to be okay. They want that echo chamber of the world is an awful place. And I get that. And I've been there. And up until yesterday, I was struggling a lot with this reinvention. And I was distracting myself with social media, with doing everything but my main channel, Matthew Santoro on YouTube. I was doing everything else. My podcast, my second channel, my Twitch channel, social media, my cat's social media, just distraction. And I decided yesterday, I was just tired of not feeling good about life. I lost the energy to exercise. And I thought to myself, you know what? If I'm going to get through this pandemic, I need to really, really simplify and conserve my mental energy, because you only have so much mental energy in a day. It's the reason why Steve Jobs wore the same thing every day, Mark Zuckerberg, all these people, because they wake up, they put something on, that's one less decision that they have to make, and their think tank remains at 100% until they have to make decisions and create things for the platform. And I had been draining my mental energy by noon, just doing random stupid things like checking Twitter and thinking about, oh, who is elected, who isn't, oh, this shouldn't be that way, this shouldn't be that way. It was just too much. And last night, I made some sweeping life changes. I deleted all social media off my phone. Wow. I've decided to be careful about the groups of people that I invest a lot of time in, because I'm in some group chats that aren't in line with what I'm trying to do here, which is reinvent myself and do something different than the top 10s. And if I'm going to do that, I need a lot of support in my life, and I need a lot of not wasting my time on secondary things. And so as of today, I went to the gym, I feel good, I'm doing this, and then I'm going to work on my new content. And it's going to be a lot of failure. I know that right off the bat. As you know, and as any entrepreneur or anyone that's found success knows, you do not find success until you find failure first. And you find a lot of failure first. I'm sure that you've had tons of failure in your life, but you get to a point where you have to be comfortable with failure. And I've been avoiding failure because I've been scared, like, is my audience going to be there? Are they going to want anything but the top 10s? No, all that is just mental noise. I'm going to get down to making what I want to make, and I'm going to make it as best as I possibly can. And I'm going to keep reinventing and keep trying new things until something pops. I've done it before. I can do it again. And anything else is a distraction, and it's not going to serve that purpose.
Well, first of all, thanks for sharing that here, because I love that you're doing that and that we're actually talking about reinvention. You're saying, hey, I just got up dead. I believe in karma. Like, I'm a big believer in karma. I think that, I don't believe in fate. I do not, but I do think that, the universe, you put the things out there, things do come back to you. And I am a believer in that. But you talk, like, I just want to put it in perspective for people. Like, when you quit Twitter, let's use it as the platform example. How many followers would you have had on Twitter at the time you quit it?
Well, I didn't quit. I'm choosing not to go on it.
Okay. So you still have your account. Yeah.
Yeah. I still have all my accounts. I'm just, if I need to upload something, it'll be from my desktop. Or if I need to promote something, it'll be from desktop, because there's just too much temptation to pull this out. If I'm in the bathroom or I need some mental stimulation, I need that dopamine hit. And then I go on there and I get it's diminishing returns. Like, I remember when I first discovered social media, it was so exciting to see the likes and to see all the comments and stuff. And then over time you start to depend on it, and it's a drug. It really is. And it's super unhealthy. And I found yesterday that I need to just cut that out if I'm going to do what I'm setting myself up to do, which is to catch lightning in a bottle again. And that's going to be hard.
But you talk, when you say that, I think about the word focus comes to mind right away. I think, okay, what he's done is he's shifted his focus from all of these, what feels like minor little distractions, I'm picking up my phone to check Twitter, or I'm picking up my phone to check, my email or whatever. And you can do it all from your desktop. And it actually does focus you, because then when you walk away from your workstation, you aren't constantly looking at that. Maybe you're picking up a book. Maybe you're exercising. Maybe you're saying, hey, I'm going to make a home cooked meal instead of, order in and eat while I'm working, like all the things that we're doing that really aren't helping our health. And I just want to get back to health and kind of what you talked about with mindfulness and these things that you're going through, because this is a mental game, right? That we're in a huge mental game right now. We are fighting really for our sanity in many respects, like trying to just hold on to who are we, what is this world about, what's going on out there, what's happening to society, all of this noise around us, which is amplified when we pick up our phones and, like you say, check all of these channels constantly. Who cares how many likes something gets? And frankly, I'm getting really exhausted by all of the you know, like the influencers out there that are using their voices only to influence for buying something as opposed to influence by who they are. Like, I just think, you know, I get that that's how some people are making their living that way. YouTube, you're making your living through, you know, sponsors and people who are supporting you, but you're not constantly selling something. You're constantly, you know, you're talking about who you are. You're providing entertainment. You're doing something beyond just trying to sell something. And I think we're getting lost in this notion that it's all about influence in a bad way, as opposed to influence in trying to help people live their lives more effectively right now. And the reason I bring all that up, Matt, is I know that, and I know I talked earlier about optimism and, you know, like we need it, but I know in 2017, you came out and talked about the fact that you had suffered from depression.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've had bouts of depression. I have anxiety. I've dealt with some of the same sorts of challenges. And I think it's really hard sometimes when you're in those dark places to figure out how you're going to get through them. And in particular right now, you know, do you have any advice for people about how you got through there and what you did and how social media, the thing we're talking about, actually might actually make it worse for you than better?
For sure. Well, I don't think there's any question that social media is going to make it worse. So that's just right off the bat. I don't think that anything, how do I phrase this? I don't think social media is inherently bad or evil. However, it's a tool, just like thinking's a tool. And if you overuse either, you get depression, you get anxiety. So, you know, for me, the way that I got through it, and everybody's journey is different, but the way that I got through it was, I remember spending, I think it was my 32nd birthday. I think it was my 32nd birthday alone in my bed in Los Angeles crying. And I remember that was the moment thinking, what am I doing? Like, how much longer is this going to go on for where how much longer am I going to live in this comfort zone of pain? And I say comfort zone because when you get really depressed and sort of hit a bottom, it becomes this place of comfort. You become comfortable in this zone of woe is me. And that's a bitter pill to swallow. And people don't like hearing that, but that's coming from somebody that had to admit that to themselves, is I'm in this place of comfort and I don't want to deal with the unknown of therapy, meditation, medication, possibly. Like, there's just so many unknowns. I don't even want to go down that route. I'm just comfortable where I'm at. But my way out of it was meditation. That was a big part of it that maintains me to this day. I did try some medication, which did get me out of the hole. And the other was going to therapy, definitely. And so those three things helped get me on solid ground. And then once I was on solid ground, I could start going from neutral to happy. But if you're in this pit, you've developed so many neural pathways in the brain of negative, 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 that you need to, it's painful to walk off those grooves in the mind and start a new path, but it's worth it and it's possible. And I always say, you know, human beings don't change until the pain that they're going through starts to outweigh the pain of the change. And that's what happened to me. I just decided, you know what, whatever pain is ahead of me for having to change or discover new things about myself or try whatever medication, meditation, it's gotta be less than what I'm going through now. And so I did. And so for anyone out there, I mean, I would consult a doctor, see if there's any medications that might be right for you. I would say just be careful, because doctors are very quick to just say, okay, just pop a pill. I would say that's more of the US attitude than Canada. I mean, I lived in America for 3.5 years, and the attitude is just pop a pill, it can solve whatever you're dealing with. That's kind of the attitude. But for me, medication wasn't the long-term answer. For some people it is, because they have like sort of a mental deficiency in sort of a chemical or something of that nature. But for me, it was something that got me back on solid ground, and then I was able to get off of that. And now I meditate every day, and I still have down days. I have plenty, but now I'm more aware of myself and aware of the changes that I need to make, i.e. yesterday, I decided to make a big change. And so here I am today.
I'm excited to see your new content, but I think you've just given some really great advice. And again, you know, like if you need medication, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Sure. I mean, you do what you need to do, but if potentially, you know, there are things that you can do in addition to those things, but seeing a doctor, going to get medication, if you need medication, you know, exercise, taking care of yourself, meditation, there's lots of things you can do to help your mindset. And I would say, certainly there's been lots of people in my life and my family who, medication has saved their lives.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and continues to, and on the same token for me with my anxiety, what I have found has worked, the best has been just understanding it, you know, really understanding it, like spending some time looking and, you know, examining kind of what causes it, why is it there in your life? What can you do differently to avoid it? And then even knowing all those things, it still will come. You sure. still have to manage it. You still have to get through it. And it can be really hard. And I relate to you talking about being 32 and your bed crying, because there's times where you just want to pull the covers over your head. And these are the moments when I think reinvention becomes it's almost like a light. It's almost like, okay, maybe I can do something different and I don't have to be stuck where I am. And again, you know, I want to say to anybody listening, if you're feeling like you can't see that light, then, you know, call and get help, because for mm-hmm. sure, you know, having help and counseling is really important. And I don't want in any way anyone to think we're underestimating or mitigating or marginalizing, sorry, the need for help.
Of course.
Professionally. Yeah. Just kind of back to, I want to just go back to, you know, YouTube, you've got millions of followers in my generation, cause I'm older than you are. I know I am quite a bit older.
You don't look it.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, no, I'm quite a bit older than you, but in my generation, celebrity was somebody who was on like in the movies or, you know, like on TV, right? It was celebrity was like completely a different definition. And now you see these people kind of, and like yourself, who have become celebrities on platforms, who aren't known in the same way, but where their platforms are, they're so well known. Like they're huge. Like you have millions of people every day looking to you. I mean, that's celebrity. And then what I also notice about celebrity is, before, if you were a celebrity in movies, once in a while, somebody might go onto the TV and to the small screen, but it was rare, because like, why would they go on the small screen when they had the big screen, and vice versa, the small screen to the big screen. And now you see all this crossover, you know, musicians are becoming actors, actors are becoming writers are becoming YouTubers, you know, like everybody's kind of crossing these creative borders. And I love that. So how has celebrity kind of changed in your mind? Like, what do you think's happened to celebrity over the course of time?
I think the digital revolution of all these platforms with video hosting has brought in so many eyeballs to the internet. And, you know, it was inevitability that traditional celebrities, like I see Will Smith has a YouTube channel now, and all these various, even Matthew McConaughey has a YouTube channel yeah. where he uploads videos on his own. Like, I love that, because, you know, it's something that it was really an inevitability, where anyone smart is going to go where the eyeballs are. It's just as simple as that. And so if another platform one day comes out that's not internet related, or however, something that we can't foresee yet, and it's all the attention's there, then you're going to see a lot of people go there. And that's just the world nowadays. It's a matter of diversifying yourself and not just being on any one platform. You have to be on everything, but that's where the burnout comes in. And that's where my personal burnout came in, because I don't have a team. I don't have a personal assistant. I've really gotten back to basics, and it's just me again, like it was in the beginning. And I like that. And I absolutely could use a team, but I like the fact that it's just me, because I want to get back to doing things for the passion of it. And then I can bring people on to help me with this and that, because my business, my passion became business, and that business started to become just like a factory where the videos were like, and then, okay, it's out. Okay, on to the next. And I, that's not how it became popular. And I definitely lost a lot of viewership out of my audience who just, we thought, the 7 videos a week or however much I was putting out, can't match the feel and the energy and the passion that used to go into my 1 video a week on Saturdays. That was just me where I wrote 100% of the script. And I think there needs to be a balance there because I went all one way from all the other. And there needs to be a balance where I find my passion again and create. And then once it starts growing, bring people on, but do it in a meaningful way, not just employees, but maybe somebody that shares my passion and can add to the product.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about that. Like, so when you go to create, you're sitting down at the computer, you're thinking about what you're writing, you're making content. How do you, I'm just, because I've often thought about creating a YouTube channel. Like
I was going to ask you.
I've got a channel for my podcast now. So I'm starting there. Because I think I'm too, maybe I'm just self-conscious about it. Like, I don't know, like I don't have a problem talking to people. In fact, I love these conversations. I learned so much. You've already taught me an enormous amount about kind of just how to shape your thinking and how to go through a reinvention and how to deal with the stress of social media when, in fact, you make your living on social media. I mean, it's like all of these things that you're saying are just so interesting to me. But I don't know. I think, should it be a cookie? Like, I don't know. Like, I look at Jennifer Garner as an example. Like, I don't know if you follow Jennifer Garner. She's just like, I love all her content. There's some people I go, oh, that would be great. I should do more of that. But I just haven't landed on what that is.
Well,
that people would care to even listen to. I don't even think people would want to listen to me doing a YouTube channel.
There's a lot of that is, I don't know. What if? I mean, that is the quintessential early creator right there. I have a friend who could be so successful, but they're just not confident about themselves. I have 2 friends like that I know would be successful. Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, everyone can be successful at doing this. It's just that I think a lot of people talk themselves out of it because they either do what I did when I first started was, I don't know how I can get the millions of subscribers, or they're not confident that anyone would want to listen to them. But the thing you have to keep in mind is you don't need millions of subscribers. You can have a niche audience that's really invested, that shows up every time you upload a video, and make a good living off of that. You don't have to be a multi-millionaire. You can just be Joe Dokes who uploads a video and people start to identify with that, whatever the content is. And as far as, maybe not being confident or whatever, like, first of all, I would argue that you're more famous than I am. Like, everyone knows your name. You've been on television. You've done a lot of things. Like, you're a legend. And I think that people would really like to see what you have to say day to day. I think you should not overthink it. I think that you should start the Arlene channel and just start uploading videos about something that you're interested in. And I tell people this all the time. Whatever you're interested in, you will always find someone else, a community that's also interested in that thing. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's juggling, peanuts, like something as niche as that, you will find like a lot of people there. The world is a big place.
Peanut jugglers.
Exactly. But that's like, true. What is it? Have you thought about what you'd want to talk about?
No, but I have, and I'll tell you what's interesting about this whole conversation. And that is that, first of all, I'm going to do what you just did. You declared today that you're reinventing yourself. I am going to start a YouTube channel.
Okay, all right.
So I'm going to do it. I'm going to put myself out there.
This is the day. This is the moment. It's on camera. Let's go.
Okay. I think I would like to talk about just being a single woman who's successful in business and what that feels like just to be a single woman, and especially an older single woman. So I'm going to talk about that. about being an older woman in business and a single older woman in business and what that feels like. And let's see what people, hey, I might get 5 followers, but maybe I can help one of those 5 followers.
So, okay, 2 things. Number one, I'll give you my number. And if you want any guidance through this process, I'm more than happy to give that to you. I'm actually helping another friend of mine who's quite big in another area who wants to start making content. She has no idea where to start. And I walked her through everything and I'm still doing that. So I'm happy to do that for you. But I think what you talked about is something huge that I could see a lot of potential. Maybe I would, again, do what you want to do, but I would maybe not focus so much on the older woman thing. I don't think anyone's going to perceive you that way. People are, however, going to really focus on being a woman in business and specifically a successful woman in business and what that's like. And that's going to be huge in today's climate. I mean, the woman revolution is happening, you know, I could name 100 different things that are happening in the world right now regarding that. And I think that that's going to be huge for so many women who don't have that guidance and can't get that guidance from anyone who's really doing it. Like, I have friends who are doing it, but they're doing it on a small scale. You've done it on a huge scale and you have a lot of life experience and you would be able to talk to young and old. See, you're in a unique position because you can talk to young and old women and say, this is like life lessons of being a woman and like walking into boardrooms and men treating you a certain way and maybe disregarding your opinions and how you deal with that. Like just all kind, I see this being very successful and it's niche, but it's not.
I love it.
It's not niche, but like, I'm getting excited for you because I can see it. Like I can see like, there's not a lot of women business channels. There's a lot of men like the Gary Vaynerchuks of the world.
There isn't.
But that's the thing. You could be, and I say this with all due respect, you could be like the female Gary Vaynerchuk. And I don't like comparing people like that, but you know what I'm trying to say. Or Gary might end up being the male Arlene Dickinson. You know what I'm saying? Like that could happen.
I like that
people
better.
Could start doing that comparison. Yeah.
Well, first, so here's what's just happened. And I mean, it's really a great example. I talk in my book about reinvention, about how in order to reinvent, the first thing you have to do is be willing to say out loud what it is you want to do. And you have to take that risk of saying to somebody else, first to yourself, but then to somebody else, you know what, I want to do this. And you're going to get a couple different types of people who then talk to you back. The people who they say they're your friends, but they're really frenemies. They really are going to try and dissuade you from doing it. They're going to say, oh my gosh, Arlene, why would you do that? That's just the dumbest idea I've ever heard. Or you don't want to do that. That's going to be a waste of your time. Go and do something different. And then there's people like you who are going to encourage and support and maybe fine tune your idea into something that's even better for the future. And then you can start to make it a reality because you say it over and over again, you get the support you need, you go out and you start thinking about how you can use your past experiences, use your purpose in life, which I want to help people as my purpose. And then think about, you know, kind of what your skills are and then go out and put it out in the world. And I think we just went through that entire exercise all by accident, you guys.
This is completely off the cuff. This is actually like our first time like meeting.
But I
would like to actually offer a third category of person that is actually almost insidiously more dangerous than the other two. It's not dangerous when someone's saying, supporting you, that's great. There's going to be frenemies and there's going to be people that talk you down and say, that's not a good idea. You can't do it because in their mentality is limited. And so they want to project that on you. It's a zero sum game. If Arlene's successful, I can't be successful, which is nonsense. But there's a third category that's insidious and dangerous in a way that you don't realize, which is the people that love you. Because often what happens is the people that love you and want to protect you will talk you out of something because they don't want to see you get hurt. And oftentimes that's a parent. And so as a younger person, you know, like if you want to become a YouTuber, you might say, Mom, Dad, I want to be a YouTuber. And they're going to say, why don't you get a real job? Or why don't, like, cause, and not because they don't believe in you, but because they're worried for you. They don't want you to be a bum on the streets that's trying to make vlogs and things like that. They want you to get a 9-to-5 because that's how they were raised in their mentality. And they're projecting that on you. And they want the best for you. But the reason that's insidious is because they don't mean harm. And they're the most influential people in your life. And so that's the hardest hurdle to get over, because it's not as hard to get over the hurdle of somebody that you know is just being a dick and is just kind of being like, you can't do it. You're ugly or you're bald. And like, I've gotten those comments at the beginning. You know what I mean?
Well,
like that matters.
Either of the, you're not definitely.
Yeah, like
not
that
ugly.
Matters. But I got tons of negative comments like that. And that's not as hard to fluff away because you realize what it is. But what really hurts is the people that look you in the eye and say, why don't you go back to school? That hurtful sort of like, I don't think you're going to be able to do it. And that is the hardest thing to get over. And you really, really have to believe in yourself. And trust me, your parents, if you're young and you're listening to this and you really want to go for it and your parents are, you know, saying, you know, why don't you go be a doctor? Or why don't you go do this or that? Why don't you follow in the family business? They're not going to be complaining when you're bringing in millions of dollars and you're famous or you're helping people around the world and you have a little community or a little or big community around you. They're not going to be complaining after that when you're buying them a house or they see that their son or daughter is very successful. And I was lucky because when I came to my parents and said, I want to be a YouTuber and I'm going to go for this. They did not try to talk me out. Neither my dad or my mom. My dad used to be a little bit more conservative. So I remember him reluctantly saying like, Okay.
Yeah, really?
Got my support. You know, my mom just said, yeah, go for it. But my dad That's is a awesome. Little, cause he came from the business world, but you know, my dad has grown up a lot over the last 10 years. And now, you know, he's a teacher and even he teaches in his classroom, like, you know, that all this kind of stuff is possible. So,
Well, and they know that's a really, maybe we can kind of finish our chat there because I do think that, who knows, maybe my grandkids are going to, you know, major in pre-pandemic Canadian history. Like, who knows, right? And they're going to become experts in the way the world was versus the way the world is. Mm-hmm. And what that, you know, the whole continuum has looked like and why human nature has changed to what it is. And that's something that could very well be a much in demand career that we can't even foresee right now.
Right.
So I do believe that you have to be true to yourself. To reinvent, you have to learn from your past without berating yourself for your past. You have to learn from your past without, you know, rewriting your history to something that you want it to be versus what it was. And you have to really, really find your why, you know, why you get up every day. And I think you uncovered that again. You know, you were realizing you were doing things.
Trying
just
to.
By, yeah, well.
I did back in the day, but I'm trying to do it again. I'm trying to do it again. Yeah. And I think I will. And it starts today and this is an exciting day for both of us. Really. I'm glad that we have this recorded. This is the magic of the digital age that we live in. Cause we'll be able to look it's back on this day, Wednesday, November 8th, 9:52 AM. That's great, great time. But, and this is maybe what we'll finish on. I don't know, but in terms of you know, how spirituality ties into all this, or even just mental health. Some people aren't comfortable with the term spirituality, look at depression as living in the past and focusing entirely on the past, and anxiety as focusing entirely on the future. Because that's what depression is. It's ruminating on mistakes of the past, the things you've done in the past. And anxiety is worrying about the future. What will happen? Could this happen? And the only place peace is right now. Now is all that we have, the present moment. And all the enlightened beings of the past, every single one of them have all taught that all the peace that you can get is all in the present. And if you stay present and focus on your breathing, especially if you're having like a panic attack, like what do they tell you if you're having a panic attack? Breathe.
Breathe.
Right?
Yeah.
There's a reason for that, because when you're breathing, you're bringing in life into your lungs. You're bringing in the present moment. You're not, your mind, it gives your mind the chance from going at 1,000 miles per hour down to just breathing. And you'll notice throughout the day, most people breathe artificially shallow. Most people, if you just check in on your breathing randomly during the day, you'll notice it's artificially shallow. But when you're breathing deeply, you're bringing your attention back to something that is an automatic process. Like breathing, you don't think about breathing, you just breathe, right? You don't pump your blood, you just do it. But breathing is the one thing that you can focus on and control. And that would be my recommendation to anybody is, you know, if you're thinking about reinventing yourself and you're going to go through panic attacks, you're going to go through depression and anxiety and just a whirlwind. But if you focus on the present moment, and I can't recommend meditation enough, just it'll bring you from this back to more of this. And of course you're going to have some days like that. Then you're going to go back and it'll just keep you grounded and you're going to need that to reinvent yourself. And it frees up a lot more mental energy to do what you need to do, but you'll be able to do it. Focus on what you want to do. Or if you're, you know, reinventing yourself, focus on that, eliminate the distractions and just persist. And you will be successful.
Matt, I feel blessed to have spoken with you today. And I'm so glad that you took this opportunity to join the podcast with me. I've learned a ton from you. I can't wait to stay connected. See what we do. Like I want to see your new content and I want to see my channel and let's see what happens. But thank you so very much. And nothing but success with everything you're doing. And I think you've left an enormous amount of a wealth of information and advice for people that's really going to help them on their path to reinvention. So thank you.
Good. Absolutely. And I'm going to have to pick up your book now. I got to go. I'm an avid reader. I've got literally hundreds of books behind me on the shelf. So
I'll send you a copy.
Sure. Sounds good.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Aline.
The end of one journey always signals the beginning of the next. In Matthew's case, this meant forging forward on the path he had already begun to create. While in retrospect, it's always easier to find the opportunity in a situation, pausing and taking time to assess what is in front of us can help steer us in the direction we want to go. For Matthew, his sense that a platform that focused on video was going to be the next big thing proved to be right. The decision to make a leap is always easier said than done, but when you've identified your currency, calculated your risk, and know deep down that you're following your core purpose in life, the end will always justify the means. Stay safe and stay human. Thanks for listening, everybody.
This podcast is made possible by the great folks at Venture Communications. Thanks to our engineers, writers, producers, and all the folks who work really hard to bring you these great stories of reinventions each and every week.